Welcome to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno.
Is there a bigger universe inside each of us than there is outside? Do paranormal events fit together into one big picture? When we see this picture, what does it do for our understanding of everything? Well, as Ben would say, hey there, and welcome to the 113th broadcast of Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno. I'm Paul, and I'm afraid that Ben is sick this week and couldn't be with us. And I will try to fill in for both of us anyway. He sends his best, and he left some questions, of course, for the guest, whom you will meet shortly. Anyway, but before we get to those questions, it's time for our contest question. Lauren L. from North Providence, Rhode Island, did it again. She correctly answered last week's question, what supposedly appeared in the sky over the Battle of Mons, Belgium in 1914? Well, the answer, the Angel of Mons, which I believe is pronounced correctly. This apparition supposedly scared the Germans long enough so that the British troops could retreat to safety. While there were many witnesses who swore to the validity of this apparition for the rest of their lives, it's been argued that it was based on a work of fiction that the British military used as a propaganda tool. Well, anyway, decide for yourself. This week's question is, what 1966 UFO case became known as Australia's Roswell? Now, come on, all you Australian listeners. This is your big chance. We know you're there because you send us a lot of emails. And if you'd like to tackle that, I suppose I don't expect you to call on the phone, but for anybody local, it's 401-766-1240, or from anywhere in the U.S. at 800-449-1240 here on ON 1240 and ONWorldwide.com, or write us at Eno, E-N-O, at ONWorldwide.com. So if we don't announce a winner during the show and you still think you can get the answer, drop a line to Ben at ben@behindtheparanormal.com. And the winner gets a copy of Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind, by today's guest. Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle was raised in West Virginia, then moved to Ohio. She received her bachelor's degree in philosophy and religion from Otterbein College in 1973. She also did undergraduate work in philosophy at the Institute of European Studies in Basel, Switzerland. She also studied at Boston University's School of Theology, where she received a Master of Divinity in Philosophical Theology in 1976. She received her doctorate in parapsychic science in 2005 from the American Institute of Holistic Theology in Birmingham, Alabama. She's an ordained Methodist minister, a certified hypnotherapist, and life coach. Dr. Hardcastle was an ecumenical chaplain and director of campus ministry at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, from 1976 to 1992. And along with these many credentials and many more, Dr. Hardcastle specializes in paranormal studies, concentrating on advanced consciousness via UFO and extraterrestrial contact. All right. Through her work with exoconsciousness, a term she coined, she is committed to normalizing paranormal abilities within mainstream arenas of psychiatry, medicine, science, philosophy, and culture. Dr. Hardcastle is currently on the faculty of the International Metaphysical University, where she teaches, strangely enough, exoconsciousness. Her websites, www.rebeccahardcastle.com and www.exoconsciousness.com. Dr. Hardcastle, welcome at last to Behind the Paranormal.
Thank you, Paul. So wonderful to be with you and your listeners, and please send my best to Ben.
Oh, thank you. Yes, he had kind of looked forward to meeting you. He said, because something would always happen every time you were supposed to be on. But it's good to have you, and it's good to have you, too, because our backgrounds are very similar.
Very.
The last person I met with an advanced degree in philosophy took me to lunch, because he'd never met anyone with the same degree as he had. And so if you were within reach, I'd take you to lunch, but at least we're talking to you.
I would enjoy that.
Okay, we'll take a rain check on that.
Ben got better.
Okay. So Ben usually starts us off, and he left a few questions for you here, and he starts out with, what is exoconsciousness?
Exoconsciousness is a word that was actually given to me. I was very involved in a study of ufology, studying all types of UFO crafts and the history of it as you were, you know, giving the questions to your listeners for your contest. And I was just totally immersed in it. I was going to a contactee group in Phoenix, Arizona, that's run by Ruth Hover. She has the longest running UFO contactee group in the nation. And I was just saturated with shamanism, ufology, beginning to go into exopolitics and work with Michael Sala. And one morning, I was literally just lying in bed, kind of in that half dream time, half awake, and the word exoconsciousness just was laid in my mind. And I was just told very clearly, or felt that I was told very clearly, that this was the concept that I was to dedicate myself to during this time and during my time here on Earth. And so the way I define it is exoconsciousness is the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of our human consciousness. In other words, it already exists within our consciousness.
Okay. Now, pretend that I'm, you know, Joe the truck driver, or Susie the truck driver, or Joe the secretary, Susie the secretary. How do you communicate something this lofty to ordinary people? Because it seems to me that if you can't communicate to ordinary people, it's useless.
Well, the way I would just communicate to ordinary people, because I'm ordinary, you know, I'm a mother and kids, and I just I work. The way I would explain it is that we all have a connection outside of ourselves that really lies within ourselves. And we could look at those connections in terms of religion, whether you want to say, you know, Muhammad or Jesus Christ or Buddha, you know, whatever religion that you're a part of, you come to a point within that religion that you say to yourself, you know, this Jesus Christ or Muhammad or Buddha really isn't separate from me. It also dwells within me. And then I would say the same thing to them about their beliefs about extraterrestrials in the universe, that they are linked to a consciousness and an intelligence and a form, actually, outside of themselves that is also part of who they are.
Okay. See, now here comes the notion of aliens. Now, where do alien life forms come into this? Now, in other words, we've done whole shows on human origins and the possibilities, the probabilities of somebody influencing our genetics, or you know, the Human Genome Project finding 223 genes that shouldn't be there. All this circumstantial evidence, so there are more than circumstantial evidence.
Right.
Where in your explanation do aliens come into human history, and where do they fit into this exoconsciousness picture?
Well, I have read so much in that area that you just described that I would be inclined to say that we have met the aliens and they are us.
Okay. Paraphrasing
a
revolutionary war.
an alien life form, and, you know, to try to... each individual, I believe, comes to a point in their life where they can either remain separate from what they believe, or they can just become one with it and trust that, you know, this is something that's coming from my heart as well as from my life as well as from my mind, and come to see that they are part of a greater whole.
Yeah.
And I think these times of uncertainty that we're all going through is interesting. I was watching TV the other day, and they asked a question about the economy, and they had six people on at one time, and they just flew through them and had each one of them just give a really quick answer to what was going on with the economy. Every one of those people in their, you know, 10-second response said the word uncertainty.
Hmm.
And I listened to that and I thought, oh, how interesting, because, well, you as a philosopher know, you know, existentialism and many schools of philosophy dealt with the void.
That
we are in a void, and many schools of shamanism deal with the void, and many of us have literally lived our lives for the last, you know, decade or more where we have artificially put ourselves into places of uncertainty and artificially put ourselves into a void, so that as we maneuver and navigate these times, we actually know where we're going with this.
Yeah.
And so that's all part of it. And I think as we look out into the universe, we can either see it as a void that we are fearful of, mean, who are we going to run into, and how are we going to react, and are we going to be okay, and are we safe? Or we can look at it as a void and just relax into it and know that we're one with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me preface the next question by just saying one thing as briefly as I can. Very often I'm uncomfortable with what guests are saying, as it's sometimes pointed out to me, with 40 years of paranormal experience, mostly with ghosts, quote-unquote, things of this kind. I often have more experience than a lot of our guests do, and that's a very odd position for a talk show host to be in. But in your case, in the case of people like your associate Terry Mansfield, who was a guest a few weeks ago,
right.
or astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who was a guest some months ago, I feel very comfortable with what you're saying, as ivory tower as it might sound to many people. Let me explain why. My whole experience in the paranormal, of course, started with, you know, investigating ghosts, quote-unquote, back when I was a seminary student. And it got me in a lot of trouble, but it also taught me a lot. And that's that life, I saw no evidence whatsoever that people died, not even their bodies. And life seemed to be absolutely universal. It was not the exception in the universe. And people like Sir Fred Hoyle agreed, was the late Sir Fred Hoyle. And the as much as death means anything, and that there was a certain unity that was just shot through the whole universe, the whole multiverse, and it was so obvious after you looked at the not just at ghosts, but what they mean. Nobody, well, not nobody, but a lot of people don't go beneath the surface there. They, you know, they bring out all the little instruments and they record, you know, temperature fluctuations and all this stuff to maybe prove, well, there's an afterlife. What does that mean? And the ultimate meaning seems to be that there's this unity that, precisely as you describe it, that shoots through the universe. And this includes all life, which would include extraterrestrials who might be beyond us in consciousness. Now, so I am with you on this, okay? However, maybe it's a guy thing. Maybe it's the areas of philosophy or theology I went into later on. But we always have a question on this show. Can you trust what you're seeing and what you're in contact with? And very often the answer is no. As far as creatures or critters or entities we run into in cases on a day-to-day basis sometimes, who are hungry and hostile and not what they appear to be. So the next question really has to do with that. When we are in contact, which seems to be certainly a fundamental experience of exoconsciousness, how do we know that it's true? How do we separate truth from falsity? How do we know that these entities are really our friends in the long run?
That's a very good question, and thank you for your giving me more information about who you are and what you've experienced, and how I was just reading your work and saw you referring to multiverses, which is exactly how I look at this universe, and you are describing a traveler, whether it's an astral traveler or teleportation traveler or consciousness traveler, how do they know that they're safe? And I, like you, I'm sure, have had a great depth of experience in astral travel and going into dimensions where maybe I didn't feel particularly comfortable. I'm not assuming that they were bad or good or right or wrong, but I didn't have a comfort feeling there. And once I became skilled at navigating, no different than navigating the void, I learned that I could make my own safety, that I could withdraw myself from these dimensions and come back home to my Earth life, and I was going to be just fine. I've also had a great deal of encounters with many, many, many different extraterrestrial species that other people have demonized and given them a veil of fear. And, once again, I'm not going to make any assumptions about that either, but only to say that my experience with them was not a fearful one, and I was safe, and I was protected and provided for. Another thing that I'm going into is working with Terry Mansfield, and we're actually blending our two fields. I'm sure your listeners heard her wonderful talk on her peace work, and she and I are literally blending peace exoconsciousness together, which has given a whole new view to the paranormal and living a paranormal life.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it's like, well, not only are you going to be using your head and your mind that is only wants to keep you alive, you know, that's what your conscious mind wants to do. It only wants to keep you alive. And therefore, oftentimes, it creates fear and unnecessary fear. But we define peace exoconsciousness as the extraterrestrial science of love from the heart, and then call the heart the 21st century mind. And, you know, as we move into quantum fields like holographic consciousness, and, you know, people like Greg Braden and others are talking about, if you want to move into holographic consciousness and understand what it means, then you're going to have to use the energies in your whole body, not just your brain. You're going to have to use your heart. You're going to have to use, you know, your base chakra. You're going to have to understand how energy flows.
Yeah.
And that's your safety.
Okay.
It's yourself. That's learning about yourself as well as the universe.
Okay, suppose, humanity starts to come around, say in the next 10, 15 years, all right? Suppose that, billions of people somehow discover this unity. They discover the larger, they discover the big picture, okay? What happens then? Do the aliens sort of come down and say, you know, here we are, and, well, let's join together? I mean, what happens? People begin to have experiences like this, as seems to be happening in many ways.
I think it's happening. I think exactly what you're saying is exactly what is happening.
So what's the result? What's the ultimate result?
The ultimate result is that it's not that we're going to be colonized. They've been here all along. We just haven't seen them. You know, it's kind of like a child when you raise kids, you know, just like I do. You know, you give your child a new concept, and you just look at this absolute aha moment in their eyes and their whole being, and they're like, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm getting what you're talking about. I see what you see now, Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's happening now with us as a species. We are becoming galactic. And, you know, I'm certainly not here to say I know exactly what's going to happen, because I want to be just upfront and honest with you and say that, you know, literally in the last year, I have just personally gone through such incredible changes and transformations that I would have never dreamed of. That was not what I had planned, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
Well, we're going to, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back on ON 1240 and ONWorldwide.com with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle and Exoconsciousness. Stay with us.
New River Press is proud to sponsor tonight's segment of Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Benjamin Eno. New River Press offers the best in unusual New Age books. Stand by the side of tonight's host, Paul Eno, as he battles poltergeists and helps suffering souls and families in the critically acclaimed books Faces at the Window and Footsteps in the Attic. Plunge deeper into the paranormal with Paul and learn about its influence on human history, its action in our daily lives, and its ultimate meaning for us in the best-selling Turning Home, God, Ghosts, and Human Destiny. Available now from New River Press, publishers of unusual books. Visit newriverpress.com, amazon.com, or your favorite bookstore. And set for release late this year in one of the most unusual books on the subject ever written, Paul gives us Dancing Past the Graveyard, What Ghosts Have to Say About God.
Okay, we are back Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno, minus the Ben today because he's sick. Sorry about that. And let me give you our numbers again, 401-766-1240 locally and 800-449-1240 from anywhere in the USA. This is WOON 1240 AM in New England's beautiful Blackstone River Valley and ONWorldwide.com. And we're speaking today with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle about the lofty and beautiful notions of world unity through the paranormal, if you want to say that, exoconsciousness, and expanding our consciousness to really understand that we are all one, and that includes the universe and all its denizens. I don't mean to rain on the parade here. However, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate. Let me read Rebecca an email we received from Tanya Donahue in Detroit, Michigan, and this is another point of view. I don't get it. Thousands of humans report being abducted by aliens every year, and I believe I am one of them. how can we think they are trying to help us or share some kind of exoconsciousness with us? If there really is anything to what you say, I think you are all being duped. I agree with Paul and Ben that we have enemies out there and should consider them guilty until proven innocent. A little bit more, less positive approach than you've taken. How do you respond to abductees, or people who think they're abductees, who think these people are our enemies and treat us like ants instead of equals?
Well, I've actually been an experiencer since I was a young child. I mean, that's really, you know, nothing new to me. And were there times when I was absolutely, utterly fearful? Absolutely. I remember a time. My memories of abduction started about 3 years old, and then by the time I was 12, I was just, you know, I'd already been socialized, and I knew that there was an earth life that I was living, and, you know, when these beings would show up, by 12, they were terrifying me, and I wanted nothing to do with them, and I knew that, you know, the rest of the humans that I was with didn't want to hear about it, didn't want to talk about it, and didn't want to acknowledge it, and so I responded to it in fear, and I would tell the lovely woman that emailed in, you know, first of all, thanks for her email, and second of all, you know, I myself and all of us have had to deal with our brains that have been traumatized here on Earth life, and a lot of my work as a hypnotherapist and a counselor has to do with traumatized brains and brains that have literally been, they're finding neurologically scarred by these instances when we're terrified. And Harvard psychiatrist John Mack used to talk about working with abductees or experiencers and saying, you know, but you have got to fence the fear. You know, and I would go beyond John and say, not only do you fence the fear, but you literally can dissolve with technology and hypnotherapy and different methods of actually using your body, that you can literally dissolve and make those neural scars from trauma disappear. And when that happens, a whole new reality opens up to you. I mean, if there's anything that defines our belief systems or the hologram of our consciousness that we live in, as humans on Earth, it's our fears. It's what we're afraid of. And we just keep going right back and hitting those neural scars again and again and again until we move beyond them. And then a whole new world opens up, a whole new reality. And we're not prisoner to those scars and those fears.
Okay. Now, you studied theology, as did I. And there's a term in theology known as anthropomorphism. In other words, mm-hmm. taking human characteristics and applying them to God. In other words, you know, thinking of God as the simplest example is God, an old man in the sky with a long beard, that sort of thing. You know, applying human characteristics to the divine. But the same thing could be said for extraterrestrials, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And some would say extraterrestrials are responsible for ideas of God. Some would say that. I
Absolutely.
Don't necessarily. But can we apply our motivations to alien races? In other words, other than the sense of survival or self-preservation, I mean, there seems to be very little that is necessarily in common with them. Evolution seems to make you more survivable rather than better morally. So, I mean, how can, again, I just come back to this question, how can we be sure their motivations are the same as ours?
Well, first of all, to your first question about God, I'm beginning more and more to feel that as I move through this experience of exoconsciousness, that, you know, God is an energy. You know, God is a life force that you talked about when you opened the show, that this is a life force that I am, you know, in line with or aligning my life with.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to all sorts of things like the possibilities of longevity, the possibilities of changing my DNA, you know, the possibility of being one with this cosmos that, you know, my consciousness can go out and explore and learn about. You know, that especially. And then the second part of your question, I would answer by saying, do we see aliens through the lens of our fears and our trauma scars? Absolutely, yes.
Or our wishful thinking.
But not only aliens, but each other. I mean, let's face it, we are, our neural trauma scars have created our warlike society. And now that we are finally in the early 21st century, given this phenomenal gift of being able to dissolve and reroute around those trauma scars to find a new reality where we don't have to be scared to death every minute of the day, even when we want to go relax and go to the movies, we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a whole new reality that we can open up for ourselves if we choose.
Yeah.
Now, will everybody choose it? Probably not, and that's okay, too. You know, there's all sorts of dimensions. You choose the dimension you want to live in. And if it's one free of trauma scars, I can be here to say that that's a beautiful dimension to live in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody wishes, you know, for the success of this more than I do. All right. However, I again have to point out one thing that I pointed out to Terry when we spoke and others who are sort of working hard in your movement, that I just don't believe you can go to someone like Bin Laden or Kim Jong-il, give them a big group hug, have a heart-to-heart, and everything's going to be great. It ain't going to happen. I mean, how do you approach people like that? And there are evil people in the world. How do you approach
There are dimensions in our world there are multiple dimensions that out there that, you know, people that have that are aligned with death. I mean, that's just, you know, part of the whole of our universe. But I also believe that once you get to the point of not respecting that. I mean, I feel that if you're going to be part of a life force, that you begin to trust your heart and your body and your what I call the eighth intelligence, which is a psychic intelligence. I use Gardner's work on multiple intelligences.
Yeah.
And I added an eighth intelligence on top of that, and I talk a lot about that. That eighth intelligence is our psychic intelligence. Now, when you have a psychic intelligence, there are no more terrorists. There are no more people behind the scenes pulling the strings, because your psychic ability has already ferreted out what the game is. You, Paul, and your son Ben, and probably 90% of your listeners, have such highly attuned psychic abilities, they already know what the deal is. And when you know what's going on, then you don't go there anymore.
Yeah, well, it's buried under a lot of baggage, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, you were asking a couple questions ago, what's it going to look like when this, as this all unfolds? Well, that's one of the things it's going to look like. When people get on TV and they make, you know, statements about things, or we read something in the newspaper about, you know, the next war to flare up or whatever, our psychic intelligence already knows what's going on. It's just, and we're all built and wired with it. It's just learning how to trust it.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, let's hope that can carry us through. But now, let's get back to alien influences, okay? We often, you know, we try to get people to think deeply on this show, and we'll get emails from, and it works, because people write in the most marvelous questions, and you know, think of things we haven't. And one of the things that sometimes comes up is the idea, do we, meaning our species, really belong on this planet? Are we really native to this planet? Because we just don't seem to fit. And there might be a number of reasons for that, one of which is alien influence on our genetics. And there's a certain group among the listeners who have an opinion that there is alien contact going on right now. It's because they feel guilty. Because they messed us up at some time in the distant past and wanted to sort of fix things, and ranging all the way to, you know, the systematic attempt to unify everyone and tie into the exoconsciousness so that we can and all this sort of thing. Do you believe that we were influenced genetically by aliens in the early part of our existence as a species?
I believe that there is an inordinate amount of evidence, whether it's ancient or contemporary, that there's an inordinate amount of evidence that would say yes to that.
Yeah.
And also, the other reason that I would validate that that's happening is that we are now doing it to ourselves.
True.
And when that starts to happen, you know that, you know, we're mirroring our parents or our source.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many young women go to fertility doctors now? You know, how many people are going in and looking to, you know, change the DNA structure in their body? You know, cloning and robotics and creating super soldiers as hybrids. Oh, my goodness. You know, we are immersed as a society in doing it to ourselves.
It's a potential horror show.
Of course it was done to us.
Yeah.
We're doing exactly who we are behaving as people who were created in this manner.
Well, we've done whole shows on this.
There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, we've done whole shows on this, especially when you look at the Kasag epics. And if you look at that, you've got... it's a contemporary document with Genesis and other creation accounts all this business. But you've got the mother goddess, whom the Sumerians thought is a mother goddess, Ninlil, doing literally genetic, what today we would recognize as genetic experiments, taking saliva and blood, you know, prime DNA sources, and turning the local natives into, you know, slaves, some people would say, it looked like, to do the work that their people didn't want to do anymore.
Right, right.
You know, and I mean,
and
this
aren't
is,
we doing the same with our super soldiers?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really creepy.
Yeah, non-collateral warfare. So, you know, let's send out these robotics and these super soldiers. I was just actually had the privilege of being at an incredible seminar with some different people who were actually discussing the ramifications of all these super soldiers. And, you know, once they're given these superior abilities and they're done with their enlistment, you know, they go back to normal lives. And, you know, do you remove all their superiority or do you leave it in? And
it's a nightmare.
Well, I don't know that it's a nightmare. But
well, they'd be
had to
make
consider.
Tremendous construction workers.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you're going to look at this, and, I mean, all these issues, now we're at this point in society that it was very, very clear at this conference where, you know, the whole, and you'll respect this, you know, coming from your theological and philosophical background, to the people in this room, ethics was nothing more than how do you get past the next lawsuit that's going to get thrown at you.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to bring up next, because it didn't, if this is... anything like what actually happened. It's going back to the Kasag epics. And if we're translating it properly, then, you know, where was the morality here?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, and not only that.
We have a lawsuit.
But if they used their own gene, I mean, the saliva and the blood supposedly came from one of their own people. How alien could they be?
Right.
You can't breed a cat with a rat.
No,
and
you can't.
And they're from the same planet. So what does this mean about how alien they really are? Or were.
And how far down the road of history of human evolution was this story told?
Exactly.
So maybe it was species, it might be species interrelating with species. I mean, that's the one thing. I love this field because it's like Alice in Wonderland. You open up one door and there's like, you know, millions more to open. I mean, there's
that's true. You answer one question, there are 20 more. And I don't think... a lot of the answers are all that pleasant. okay, let's move to the next step here. And this is an email from Harry G. in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. And Harry writes, I'm not some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist, but looking at Rebecca Hardcastle's website makes me wonder, what are these people trying to lead us to? Whether happy aliens are involved or not. Happy aliens, I like that. It looks to
happy
me like...
trails.
Yeah. It looks to me like a mass consciousness that could create a police state on a scale unimaginable by Hitler. Thank you, but I like the paranormal, but I also like my narrow little life and thinking for myself.
That's fine.
What do you say to Harry here?
Oh, I would say to Harry that good. I think you probably have a very, very pleasant, happy life, and that's wonderful. You know, I'm not here to, you know, convert you or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I'm in a, you know, absolute agreement with you. I mean, being in this field, one of the things that I struggled with the most was the whole issue of mind control. And I'm teaching at International Metaphysical University, and one of the
yes,
one of
do
the
I.
you know, one of the whole you know, sessions is just saturated with, you know, what happened in mind control and what happened in Nazi Germany and how has that spilled over into modern medicine and psychiatry and religion. You know, religion is full of chanting and symbolism and ritual, which, you know, quite frankly, is mind control. It's getting everybody into a mass consciousness. And as I did my work in hypnotherapy and learned about mind control, I mean, that was one of the things that I had to deal with was coming from my religious heritage that I was brought up and educated in, and to take a new look at it. And, you know, I began to see it with totally different eyes. It's like, oh, my goodness, you know, this has gone on. And yet this is also part of, as we were talking about, the whole human history. You know, ritual, is whether it's Dan Brown writing about the lost symbol or whatever, this whole, you know, sacrifice and ritual and kind of barbarian, you know, carnivorous type of behaviors is part of our religion. You know, it's part of who we are as humans, and we can either choose to participate in that or not. And that's one of the things that psychic intelligence does. It frees you. It frees you from all of that manipulation.
Okay.
Once you get rid of those trauma scars, once you trust your inner psychic ability, you don't have to be part of the mind control game anymore.
Yeah.
I also want to say to your thank the man for writing in his email and let him know that I'm a little bit different from other people, because I'm a real advocate that if you want to have these experiences, you want to astral travel, you want to go into advanced consciousness, go into it clean and clear. You know, you don't have to take drugs. You don't have to put yourself in artificial altered states. You know, this is something that your human consciousness is able to do with ease if you just relax and trust it.
Well, that's what I want to get into. I just wanted to remind everybody you're listening to Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno on WON 1240 AM and ONWorldwide.com. And we're speaking today with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle, expert on exoconsciousness. And we've been having a fascinating discussion, which I have to continue here by asking a question that also has come up among listeners on various subjects when we've talked about things of this kind. How do I put this? There is a certain feeling that, well, let me preface that by saying that when I worked in psychiatric hospitals as a seminary student and as a grad student in psychology, I would run into people who were schizophrenic, and all sorts of labels were applied to them, but I was convinced they were experiencing the multiverse. They were experiencing where they already were living lives as this person or that person, and instead of turning it into a larger self for them to live, it sort of didn't really work. You know, they were having trouble with it, and they were their consciousness was expanding, but it wasn't really working. And that leads to the question that some of our listeners have brought up. Could it be that we are not yet quite up to this, that we are not yet quite at the point in our revolution where we can experience exoconsciousness, where we can experience all that we really are throughout all these worlds, or alien, whatever? I mean, do you think we are up to this as a species now?
Well, I think it's a little late to be asking that question, don't you?
Well, frankly, I think we started out this way and
I
lost it.
I think we
it.
Did, too.
Yeah, okay.
I think we
but
started
I'm simply,
out this
you know,
way.
My job is to ask difficult questions.
Right. I mean,
no, actually, I agree with you on more than
you think. We've already answered that question.
Yeah.
I mean, it is who we are. You know, like I said at the beginning, we met the alien, and it is us. I mean, it's just beginning to see, you know, whether you're going to go and say to your life, that I'm going to study Buddhism, because deep inside, that person that studies Buddhism knows that they are Buddha, that they are the Buddha energy.
True.
It's the same thing that's happening here. It's different. It's something that our human race has been doing, but only in little pockets. And now I don't know about you, Paul, but I am so thrilled by how mainstream is just embracing and accepting this work.
I do. I don't sound like it, but I'm just as excited as you are.
Oh, I was just at a luncheon the other day, and everybody was sort of getting together for the first time and telling their stories, and everybody told the story about how, quote, I never fit in. I was always the outsider. I never fit in. And then they went on to tell who they had become today. And I was the last person. And I just said, you know, I love these stories. And guess what? We now are the in.
Yeah. No, I understand. I was the answer I was really looking for was, and I'm sure you agree, it's we're not the problem. Society is the problem.
Well, but we are society. And as we
change. Well, that's
true.
It's what we make it. But
yeah,
it seems like it controls. The reason is I often take a teenage point of view. I'm 57 years old, or going to be. I don't know. My wife keeps reminding me, you're not 57 yet. Aww. But anyway, I tend
good
to.
Good number.
I hang out with a lot of. I get to know Ben very well, obviously, and his friends.
Right.
And their point of view, I think, is far more sensible very often than the adult's point of view. They haven't been wrecked yet. You know,
right.
And they're very open to this. And they say that society steps on their growth psychically and in every other way,
mm-hmm.
every day, every move mm-hmm. they make, you know, and not in every case, of course, some of them are luckier than others, but I just think society is the real problem. Society is the reason those extraordinary, aware, wonderful old souls were locked up in psychiatric institutions rather than being considered holy mm-hmm. as they would have been 3,000 or 4,000 years ago.
It's interesting. I spoke at the at the American Philosophical Association a couple years ago, and I spoke on exoconsciousness and psychopathology.
Oh, yeah.
And psychopathology being, of course, the medical model of the disease model of consciousness in the mind. So it was interesting. There were philosophers there, and there were psychiatrists there, and I spoke about exactly what you're addressing. You know, how are we going to get to the place where exoconsciousness and allowing our human species to have this phenomenal gift of advanced consciousness and psychic intelligence and live where, you know, secrets and death and, you know, war and trauma are a thing of the past, that they no longer exist in our reality. And then we were talking about, of course, you know, people who are experiencers that are, you know, put into mental facilities as you were describing, and whether or not they were actually, you know, experiencing this whole multiverse and what that means. And it was interesting because we talked about how psychopathology is really just a response to culture. And when culture changes, they go back in and they rewrite the DSM and they put a different diagnosis on it. So we are the grassroots organization that are actually, and Ben's generation, we are the ones that are going in and changing the culture, and medicine and psychiatrists are just simply going to react to us. I sat there in those rooms, and I started thinking, okay, who has actually made the leap and changed culture? And, of course, I came with homosexuality. And so I asked these psychiatrists, I said, you know, for goodness sakes, how did you all change your mind about homosexuality? The answer astounded me. They took a vote.
They took a vote?
They took a vote.
Okay, but hearts must have changed.
Yeah,
because, you know, Max Planck, the great physicist, once said that people don't change their opinions. People who oppose certain points of view, newer points of view, die, and the ones who grew up with those points of view come into power, and that's why they become accepted. You know, it's not as if
to
people
an extent,
change their
I think
minds.
That's true, but I, you know, we have to look at, you know, what the Vatican is coming out and saying, what the Royal Society came out and said a month ago.
I've been talking about aliens.
You know, yeah, they're talking about aliens. Oh my golly!
Well,
you know,
somebody drops a word and everybody says, "Aha!"
That's culture,
you know,
isn't it?
You know, I don't know. I know people who work at the Vatican. I know two who work at the Vatican Library, and they're mum, because I suppose they tell me anything, they know it's going to be all over the air.
Right.
But I don't know. It's it may or may not have significance. It's got significance.
I agree
but it's,
with that. But
I
just making a statement, it still goes out into those waves of culture.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I know in my heart that someday there's going to be this issue is going to be addressed. Mm-hmm. By the medical foundation and
I sure hope
by
so.
The medical societies,
yeah.
Because You know, you look at movies, you look at television. It's already in the mass consciousness.
Oh, it is. Yes, definitely. As I say, you know, people often say, gee, are they getting us ready for something? First, I don't know if I give the powers that be that much credit for organization, that they could, you know, get the media in line and medicine and all this. But one does wonder that, you know, for the last 50 years, we've been learning to deal with the Klingons and, you know, people like this. You know, how hard is it going to be to deal with any kind of reality that comes up? And I don't think an awful lot of people would be surprised that, you know, if somehow aliens made themselves known, or if the Pope or somebody came out and said alien life exists. I don't think that's the issue. Because why is it that whenever we talk about this subject on this show, and again, if these things hadn't happened to us, I wouldn't believe it. But when we talk about government cover-ups, when we talk about things of that kind, weird things start to happen. And you talk to any researcher, and you know, almost any research, and they'll tell you when they get into this stuff, strange things start to happen. There's still a cover-up by somebody of something. And,
absolutely.
You know, why is it? I mean, are they opposed to the discovery of exoconsciousness by the people, or do they know something we don't know? Say you?
I would say that there are people. I think there's a lot of powerful self-interest in the whole military-industrial complex that have a real stake in, you know, making the whole disclosure process be militaristic. I mean, look at Avatar. Everybody was raving about Avatar. Oh, my golly. You know, I thought Avatar was beautiful, but, you know, quite frankly, the last third of the movie, I could have lived without ever seeing. I thought it was a violent video game. And, you know,
I can't. Ben's our movie expert.
I just felt as though, you know, I guess for my life, because I'm just a person who's relating to other communities and other people, and I think it all comes down to my life. And, you know, I'm choosing to have exoconsciousness, and I'm choosing to have my relationship with extraterrestrials be one of peace and advancement and growth and development. Do other people want to have relationships with extraterrestrials become militaristic and deaf? Absolutely. You know, I'm not here to eradicate that. I'm not here to fight with that. I'm just simply here to be and hold the energy space that I'm holding. But I know in my heart that I will always choose life over death.
Well, we're coming. I think that's an excellent way to end the main part of the discussion, because we've got coming down to the end of our time here. But I wanted to ask one or two more questions that we're not going to have time for. But one is, I just wanted to make the observation that you're not just out there on the radio or writing books about this. You're taking practical steps to bring it to people. And one of these is Quantrek Corporation. Can you tell us about what Quantrek is?
It's Quantrek. Quantrek.org.
Yep.
Terry Mansfield and I are working with Dr. Edgar Mitchell in Quantrek, and Quantrek is focusing on Edgar Mitchell came back from the moon and founded IONS, which is, you know, the wonderful consciousness group that's done so much exploration in fields of consciousness. And then he moved on from there, and he is working with Quantrek and founded Quantrek with a group of physicists, many of whom are extremely comfortable with extraterrestrial intelligence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he is working in fields of zero-point energy. You know, when we look at the whole bubble that was created around the Internet, what that did was, you know, a lot of people lost money when the bubble burst, but it also made free information available. You know, you look at what's happening in cap and trade. You look what's happening in global warming. You know, it's probably going to be the next bubble that gets created, but I think the end result of that is it doesn't have to go that way. But, you know, the end result is humans are moving toward having free energy, and that's going to be just a revolutionary thing here on our Earth. So Quantrek is moving to bring that to the planet, and I think that's the next step. And, you know, any kind of energy also has inherent dangers in it. That's why, you know, as we moved into the nuclear age, you know, there were so many instances of extraterrestrial sightings over these nuclear installations. Because, you know, there's a guiding force there making sure that we are cared for and protected.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is happening with zero-point energy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just tell us about your next book. What's up? What's coming up for you?
Oh, that's exciting. Probably going to do my next book is probably going to be with Peace Exoconsciousness. Do it together with Terry Mansfield. She and I will be doing it. Be bringing in the whole issues of how do we as a species change our DNA? How do we have longevity? How do we create an environment where longevity is a possibility? Because that's something that if you look at extraterrestrial civilizations, they have longevity. That's been something historical that they possess, you know, looking at the whole eighth intelligence and the possibilities of that, as well as looking into, I learned a lot, I'm learning a lot, I'm on a huge, steep scientific learning curve, learning about neutrinos and free energy and different ways that, you know, quantum physics works. And
okay,
so
I'm afraid we got to go.
Okay.
Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle, what a wonderful and fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch. We'll have you back. And best of luck in your work.
And also, something about the Phoenix Rising Conference, maybe, if you can, April 10th in Phoenix.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Okay, speaking of April 10th, there's also April 11th. And thanking again Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle. But April 11th, we're doing our blockbuster three-hour special on CBS, Ben and me, with also Dave and Tom Jones from CAPS Paranormal. We're going to have a 30th anniversary radio panel in honor of the commemoration of the Rendlesham Forest and Bentwaters UFO incidents in Great Britain in 1980, known as Britain's Roswell. And we will have actual eyewitnesses, former U.S. Air Force personnel, perhaps even the deputy base commander who saw all this stuff go down. And we're going to have Bill Burns from UFO Hunters and Nick Pope, a former chief of the UFO desk at the British Ministry of Defense. Going to be an exciting show. It'll be on CBS New Sky Radio on Sunday, April 11th, and we'll tell you more as we go. And that'll be 7 to 10 p.m. on our time, Eastern, and 4, et cetera, Pacific time. So anyway, let's continue here. BehindTheParanormal.com is our website. You can get podcasts and various information about our guests, past and future. And our show phone number, not the call-in number, but the daily, day-to-day show phone number has changed to 401-651-7732. If you have any questions for us or any suggestions, we're always glad to hear it. So many thanks to our producer. I guess we started out with Dave. We ended up with Brittany, and always a pleasant to have either one of them. And we'll see you next week, Saturday, February 27th, right here on WOON, 1240 a.m. at ONWorldwide.com at 11 Eastern a.m. and 8 a.m. Pacific. Our guest will be Heather Woodward, an expert in the weird art of psychometry. That's the ability to literally read objects. Imagine the possibilities. And on our regular Sunday show tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, CBS Radio, NewSkyRadio.com, in Seattle, Boston, and Detroit, our guest will be Mary Marshall, animal communicator and intuitive healer, to talk about how and what we can learn from the animals. Check our show website again, BehindTheParanormal.com, to see where you can pick that up. And in the meantime, we leave you with a quote from the good old Mark Twain. The only way to keep your health is to eat what you don't want, drink what you don't like, and do what you'd rather not. And we'll see you next week.
Return to this radio frequency 167 hours from now for another edition of Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno.